Hello and welcome to Theatre Voice. Today I'm talking to Mike Bartlett, the writer of My Child, which opened at the Royal Court recently and plays till the 2nd of June and has already virtually sold out for the rest of its run. So begin by asking you, Mike, tell us, just describe in brief words what the play's like, what it's about.
The play is about a father who is trying to hold on to his son. The son lives with his ex-wife. And she is trying to keep the son away from the father. She is trying to erase the father from the son's life, basically. And the play charts his struggle to maintain some influence over the child. Eventually, he can't do that, so he kidnaps the child and takes him to Scotland in order to have some quality time with him. And is then tracked down by his ex-wife's new partner, who retrieves the child. And it's a play about, I suppose it's a play about trying to be good, about masculinity, about fathers and sons, about that, those relationships and how important they are, and about maybe the way in which our values have changed post-Thatcher, that maybe it's a play which looks at how society used to be, about the things we strived for, about the things we thought used to think were good, and now maybe we've got a society of choice and success that works against that, and the play maybe stages those two things. In terms of its form, it's a series of scenes which are a bit like bouts of wrestling. Characters get at each other, they are violent, they're abusive, they're nasty, but all because they want to lead good lives, and often because they love their family. So, in terms of writing it, I suppose one of the intentions was to show that a family is somewhere where you do find the most unconditional love, but it's also the place where you find the most violence and the most danger. And the problem with someone knowing you so well is they can crush you so completely.
What was the original genesis of it? I mean, I know it's awful to ask, you know, where do your ideas come from, but what prompted, I mean, this particular kind of Fathers for Justice style storyline, in a way, it sort of taps into it.
Yeah, in a way. I mean, it didn't really come from that so much. I mean, it, as with most of the things I've written, it just came from different things being placed together. So somebody told me a story about when they were working on a farm and they had to fend a cow away because they have to take the calf away so that the cow can get milk from the cow. But when they do that, the cow goes crazy. And whereas normally if you hit it with a cattle prod once, it just runs away. When this happens, when the calf is taken away, it just goes mental and won't stop until it's bleeding and on the ground and all that. And I thought that's really interesting. And I did see a link between that and these men dressed as Batman standing on the Houses of Parliament or Buckingham Palace. And I thought, there's something that's driving those men to do things that is quite odd. And it seems that we understand and we completely get the relationship between a mother and a child, but there's actually maybe a very sort of fundamental relationship between a father and a child. And that when that's disrupted by society or by relationships or whatever, that's when something goes wrong, and a man can really lose it when he doesn't have access to his son and doesn't feel that he's being brought up as his son.
This is one of the most interesting points of the play, is the kind of almost ideological clash between the two models of father that the child has. Mm. There's the very kind of breadwinning, hunter-gatherer almost kind of macho father that the mother's now with, and the, I suppose, you know, he seems like a perennial kind of loser, disorganized, and who the mother's come to despise. But he still has this very firm take, doesn't he, on the way that his son is being brought up being wrong. He says, "You've spoiled my child," at one point, doesn't he? He's really resistant to that. Is that...
Yeah. And there are these words which often are used in the play, like good. And it's good, a sort of a value thing about being good, about doing the right thing. Or is it always good about success, about about getting it right and having the right things and living the right life. And right is another word. So that these words are used throughout, and they represent the idea that life is about society, possibly, and about loving each other and about trying to do the best you can in that sense. And then another way of living, which I think seems to be becoming perhaps a bit more prevalent now, which is about looking after yourself, looking after your family, and that love comes from being able to give your family what you want, to make sure they're safe, to make sure they have everything. And yeah, I mean, the two father figures in the play, I suppose, in a sense, represent those two sides. But of course, they are contradictions. So the man who lives by ideals and tries to be good is flawed and is flawed throughout the play.
Absolutely, yeah.
And actually, the man who is perhaps richer and has made harsher decisions in life is maybe not a bad father at all. He's maybe actually a fantastic father. And so it is all complicated like that. And I think that's really important that none of the people in the play are symbolic of anything. It is just a story, and it's a story about a family that's gone a bit wrong.
Yeah. Although beyond the symbolism of the fact that the characters aren't symbolic, there's a lot of use of metaphor. I mean, to go back to the sort of looking at the play structurally, there's, as well as being enormously inventive, I mean, there are pages where, if you took away the names, it would read like Crave, where people are having conversations over one another, and there are kind of four-way conversations going on, and it textually, it's probably quite difficult to understand, maybe, on first reading, if you hadn't seen the production, I think. But there's also this metaphor of the child's arm going black, isn't there?
Yeah, I think that's probably the only properly symbolic thing in the play, is the child's arm. And I mean, in terms of the scenes cutting between each other and dialogue being cut up, it is tricky to read on the page, but I think actually when you see it, it's quite simple, because we have a language of that cutting up from film and television, and we can have two scenes in our head running at the same time, cutting between them line by line. Films do it all the time.
Yeah.
24 even puts two shots next to each other, and we can follow both of them, and we actually enjoy making the effort of constructing the story out of different things, and we enjoy being bombarded with that, with all that sort of stuff. And certainly for me, that structurally, although it sort of is perhaps innovative in the theatre, the language of the language and the pace of the form and all that just comes from American TV shows, where they know how quickly you absorb information. And they don't wait around. They give you a 45-minute experience, which doesn't feel too short. It doesn't feel rushed, but it feels exciting and it feels dynamic, and it tells a story with depth. Hopefully you don't have time to be bored, because you're working so hard to construct what's going on and to understand everything. I just thought, you know, I love television. I've always watched television. I think that it is a play which, for me anyway, I just got a bit. It felt like theatre was often ignoring the fact that most of its audience go home each night and watch television.
Mm.
They don't go home each night and watch Chekhov. They don't go home each night and watch Shakespeare. They watch television, and they watch actually increasingly good quality television, and they have preferences on that, and that's that dramatic language that they generally use. So I was like, well, why don't I write a play which engages with that language, tries to do more with it, tries to make it a very live experience, and tries to make it a thing where you're in the room with them and use all the things that theatre can do that television can't. But in terms of storytelling, in terms of character development, it doesn't mess around, it doesn't wait around, it just gets on with it, and it gives you what you want often. And that there's nothing wrong with that, as long as you're in the story, you're thinking, you're feeling, and it does all that. And I think that's what people feel coming out of it. They don't feel confused, they don't feel that it's been overly arty, they feel they've just been told a story, and it's been a bit of a rush, and they feel braced by it, I think, from what people have said.
Do you have a sort of wider questions that you want the audience to come out with?
I think, to me, one of the things that I love theatre doing, and I hope this sort of does it, is that you see the world as it is before you go in, and then you go into the theatre, and when you come out, the world looks a little bit different. And people have spoken about this, because the set, one of the reference points for the set is a tube, which is, in many ways, for people in London, what the place where they are at their most public. They are at the most communal. You know, they're at no point else in the day are they squeezed in such a small space with so many people. And so people are commenting on the fact that they get on the tube, they come to the court, then they go back into the space, and it's like they're back on the tube. And then they have to do the reverse journey. But on the way back, they're looking at people on the tube thinking they've all got a story. They're looking at the adverts in a different way. They're being more critical towards the world. And I hope that, that for me, that's one of the aims of the play, I think, is to sort of make everyone just think about things, contextualise the world, make people a bit dissatisfied with the world. I don't think it's a play which gives any answers, but I hope it asks questions, and I hope it kind of I hope it encourages people to not just accept that this is the way things have to be, that actually there might be things that are wrong that need to be sorted out.
This seems to be an ongoing theme as well as your work with what's being put on this season at the Royal Court. I mean, yours is possibly the fifth in or fourth in a series of first plays by new writers. Mm. New artistic director Dominic Cook, I think, deserves an enormous amount of recognition for the writers that he's been staging. I mean, they've had, you know, effectively hit after hit with first time writers. I mean, what's it been like working there?
It's been fantastic, and I think that the thing what was really lovely to discover is that you know as when I was a bit younger, you read about how the court would stage Osborne play after Osborne play when they were badly reviewed and no one was coming because they believed in him as a writer. And I think that what was great was going there and finding that was now completely alive and well, and that actually, they, if they like you as a writer, they will back you to the hilt and they want you to do the play that you wrote. And I think that has, and it's so exciting there now, I think, to have all those first-time writers, to have that energy, to have the bar full of younger people, of people who look a bit more cool, a bit more, who, and actually a complete mix. And then also the Seagull audience, who are perhaps a bit older and actually, but are completely coming to these new plays, are loving that face, are thinking that that's a great play. And I think, to me, the thing that links a lot of these plays is that for a while the court hasn't done that many first-time plays. They've done maybe one or two a year. And so there's been a build-up of writers who are working and thinking and writing but haven't been able to get on some of the stages that they might have been able to get on in the mid-90s. And so it feels to me like there's an explosion of truth in this writing, that these are not plays which aim to present an ideology or aim to say this is how the world should be, but they're the beginnings of a project saying, can we just present the world that we're seeing on stage without, as it really is? And if that's uncomfortable, if that means that the play leans a bit more towards the right than the left, then that's okay, because what we need to do is we need to show the world as it really is before we can even start to think about what we want to do with it. And I think Gone Too Far did that. I think That Face certainly does that. And I think the play that's opening there at the moment, Alaska, does that beautifully and refuses to shy away from the fact of what people are doing sort of just under the radar. And I think that's exactly what the best plays have always done, is to take things that you can't quite see, you can't quite pin down, but you suspect are going on, and bring them out and say, this is going on, and it's not, and maybe it's not right. Is it, do we approve of this? What can we do about it? So I think it's the dialogue of some of these plays, Alaska particularly I'm thinking about, is just, it sounds different. It just has a different rhythm to it. And I think that is really exciting. And I think that's one of the real things you get from having first time writers and new plays like that.
Although it's interesting, I mean, we were discussing just before we started recording, it's in a way slightly wrong to discuss you all as new first time writers, because obviously you've been writing for a long time, since university, mm-hmm. and with the Apathists group, which we'll talk about in a moment at 503, there's that kind of motor behind a lot of young writers when the court wasn't maybe staging them and maybe they weren't getting through at the Soho. There's been that kind of back channel where there's been people making their own groups. I mean, tell me briefly about the Apathists and how that came about.
The Apathists was myself and five other writers felt that we'd met on various things. We met on the Young Writers Programme at the Royal Court. We'd met on the 24-hour plays at the Old Vic. And we felt that we were beginning to get interest from theatres in terms of starting to think about maybe commissions or getting our plays on. But we actually hadn't had much stage time. We hadn't had much experience of having our work on. So we set up the first Monday of every month at Theatre 503 for a year. We did a night where we, all six of us, wrote pieces that weren't works in progress, that weren't ever to be done again, that weren't script in hand, that didn't have the safety net of anything, that were just six, 10-minute bits of theatre that tried things out. And the whole point was that we were allowed to fail. So we played with form, we played with content, we tried different things, we pushed our writing. And, you know, a good 50% of it was rubbish. But another amount of it was, I think, quite interesting and quite good. And certainly, I think, has led to the fact that led to us being a bit more confident in our writing, discovering those voices. And for me, the fact that it is my first play, My Child is my first play, in as much as it's the first professional production. And I'm quite glad that actually, looking back, I'm quite pleased that that's only happened now. Because this is a play that I'm really proud of, and I feel it's something that I really wanted to write, and I feel I'm sort of in charge of it. And that's come from experimenting with work and doing lots of really short plays, lots of other bits, lots of readings and stuff like that for quite a while. And I think there is a mixture of those two different sorts at the Court at the moment. So DC Moore, who's written Alaska, is probably more... He's been around for a couple of years writing a bit like myself. Whereas Polly Stenham... And I think possibly Alex Wood have not written so much before, and these are properly their first plays, and I think that's great. But it's lovely that culture, which has been around for a couple of years, of a whole load of writers, Simon Vinnicum, Duncan McMillan, Rachel Wagstaff, Nick Gill, Morgan Lloyd Malcolm, and Duncan McMillan, and... lots of people who have had plays on at the Fimbra or had plays on at 503 or whatever are now getting plays on in these slightly bigger houses, and I think that's quite exciting, actually. I think it's good.
It is. I mean, from the Apathists, I mean, Duncan's got a play on at the Manchester Royal Exchange starting shortly, if it hasn't started already, and other writers from that ilk. You know, it feels like people are finally starting to pick up on that, this new kind of movement. Well, it is very interesting the way that the work is so diverse. I mean, do you think there is beyond what we were talking about, where you describe it as a kind of an attempt to look at the world and just describe it? Do you think there is more of a project common to the writers than that, or is this the movement and how it would?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think you can tell until sort of afterwards, really. But I think simply. Yeah, I mean, for me, that's what I found with these plays, that the plays of these people is that they do want to look unflinchingly at the world. They don't want to look through it. They don't want to look at it through a prism of what they hope the world is or what they believe the world could be. They would, at the moment, they just want to present the world that they see, and they have a problem with that world. There's something not right with it, or you know, some of them celebrate it in many ways, but they're not. They're, generally speaking, they're plays which are slightly. They're not content with the world, and I think that's the only thing that I can see that links them at the moment.
What writers would you count as influences, either from your own contemporaries or older playwrights?
Obviously, like Shakespeare is probably one of the first playwrights that you are aware of, and that. Throughout, I've sort of read it and then got bored of it and come back to it. But that particularly, I'm interested in the form of that theatre. That actually, the form of that theatre is great because it is really quick. It's just people come on and say we're outside a castle, and then you know we're outside a castle. They don't bother about scene changes. They don't worry about set. They don't worry about lights. They just get on and they tell the story, and they tell it often very quickly. But they also have a theatre which can go into mind space, which can be imaginative, which recognises the metaphorical link between the distance on stage and the distance between characters, the idea that the globe is representative of the world, but it can also be a brain, but it can also be England, and it, you know, it can that form of theatre to me seems very modern actually and quite underused, and I think the Globe's done a really interesting job in showing us that again. So I suppose that's there, and then, you know, Beckett and Harold Pinter definitely. And then recently for a couple of years I was really into Tony Kushner, mainly because he succeeded in being both sort of popular and profound, I think. And I think that combination is probably the thing that I would love to be able to be, is a theatre that it absolutely, you don't need to bring anything in with you. You just need to enjoy it and watch it and get it. And it's not difficult. It's not clever. It's not difficult in terms of its form at all. It allows everyone who comes to see it to enjoy it and think about the subject of the work, so therefore to think about the world. I'm not interested in sort of art which either through the content or through the form only speaks to a certain small sector of society. I'm not that interested in that. Recently also I directed a couple of plays by Keith Dewhurst, who worked at the Court in the early 70s, and his philosophy is exactly that. He speaks about how when he wrote plays for the Court and then he wrote episodes of Zedcars, he would write in exactly the same way. He didn't see any distinction between writing for television or theatre in terms of the audience he was writing for, and I think that's really exciting. And that is the way that theatre will become popular and less elitist, is if we stop thinking of the audience in theatre as being in some way different or of a different class or of a different intellectual capability, and we realise actually the best theatre that we see is often the one that appeals to the most people. And I think that Brecht had said the same thing, and I think that it would be that. So that's what I think I'm always going to aim for. That obviously those people are very different. I think, you know, Brecht and Chekhov and Kushner and Pinter all do very different things in some ways, but they're all popular, or they were in their time, and they all have moments of being profound, and I think that would be great. So I suppose that's the main influence.
It was very interesting. I was talking about your play on 18 Doughty Street, which is a sort of politically conservative TV channel, and the majority of the guests on the chat show that we were talking about it on also politically conservative, and your play certainly, you know, spoke to them completely, and they were happy to take it on board, and it didn't, they at no point did they feel kind of preached at by some kind of lefty ideology. So I suppose that's another interesting way in which I suppose you're communicating what you want to say in such a way as it's not hitting people over the head dogmatically, and it obviously seems to be working and a lot more popular.
Well, I think in terms of writing what you might want to, I mean, I believe in political plays. I think political plays are really important, and I always try and look at the stuff I write through a sort of political sort of prism. But actually, if you think about what politics means to most people at the moment, it means specific issues. It doesn't mean I am left or I am right. Most people don't. Certainly most people I meet don't really think about it in those terms anymore, unless that's their specific interest. So I think the plays, in order to be political, need to reflect the fact that actually it's more complicated than that, and they need to strive to get people to think about the systems that are behind our life. And you don't do that by showing the whole system. You do that by showing a problem. Well, I think at the moment, this is what I'm thinking. You do it by showing the problem and then encouraging the audience to work back themselves, and encouraging the audience and not presenting you as a writer as either left or right, because that inevitably then gives you a safety net. You go, well, I know all these characters are essentially despite what they say, despite whatever the play does, this is coming from a left perspective. Or, you know, essentially this is coming from a right perspective. And I think it's far more interesting, and it trusts people's intelligence, and it trusts people much more if you don't let them know what your, as a writer, your perspective is. But you encourage the characters to be absolutely political in what they're doing, and in the way you set it up, you encourage the thoughts about the play to be political. I think that, to me, that encourages people to perhaps work towards political change better than just saying, here's an ideology, that's what I think, or here's an ideology that I don't agree with. That doesn't leave any room for anyone to do any thought, and they've got to think. I think that's got to be what's going on.
Although your play ends with a very explicit statement in the form of a question, doesn't it? It's probably not giving too much away to say, well, the character having come to a certain point in his life, speaking to his dead parents, you know, who are also on the stage, another brilliant formal innovation, goes, it doesn't work, does it? And that for me was an enormously powerful moment, and it's a question. But did you want the audience to agree or to really think about that?
No, I mean, the fact that it ends in a question is absolutely important. Yeah. And it ends in a question and then quick blackout. And we're really keen on that quick blackout, because if you left a moment after that, it would become a rhetorical question. If you black out straight away, it is a proper question that requires the audience to then at least start to think about whether they have an answer. And some people have come out and gone, well, I know the answer to that question. It does work in some situations, or they say, I don't believe in turning the other cheek. I believe you do have to stand up for yourself. Or they say, well, actually, I do believe in all of that Christian, turn the other cheek and treat other people with respect and love people before anything else. I do believe in all of that. And I don't mind if I get beaten up. I don't mind if my family doesn't have all the things they want, because it's better to be good for society than to be good for myself. But so what the question is trying to do is then engage the play, the whole story you've been told, with that question. And it takes that, you know, that last scene is a bit like a moral at the end of a fable. It's set up like that, but actually it doesn't give you that at all. Hopefully it does the opposite. It encourages you to work back through all the things that have happened in that play and try and figure out which one of those characters you're most like, what you think they did wrong, what you think they did right. What caused them to act like that? Having that question at the end hopefully makes you be reflexive back on the whole play, and
it's almost like that kind of Boal Theatre of the Oppressed thing, where you could have a forum afterwards and maybe ask, but maybe that doesn't appeal.
But I think the bar does that. You know, I think you go down and you chat in the bar, or you chat on the way home. But certainly, it's not a play which gives you time to think about that stuff when you're in it. Hopefully it moves quicker than that, and you actually have the experience of being in the space with the audience, and you just have to try and keep up, and then only afterwards do you then go back and think about it. And I think that's how stories like that work on television. I think in a way it's an interesting way. I'm not saying it's the only way of doing it. I think I love 3.5 hour epic plays. I think they're fantastic. And, you know, I think they can give you more space to think about stuff within it and then change it and change your allegiance and change what you think and take you one way and then do that. And I don't think that's what this play does particularly. Although I think within a scene, it never tells you who's right within a scene. So, and I know it's something that the company in rehearsals were trying to find how to do this. That the play, it's not that the company wants the audience to feel something. One character wants the audience to feel this, and the other one wants them to feel that, and they are struggling to make the audience think this is funny or to make them think this is awful. And so, and again, encouraging the audience to think and to make up their mind. Who do you agree with? And to be working all the time, to be thinking and working and trying to work out what they think and try and work out where the story is and try and work out who's the hero and who's not. I hope that works. I think
it works brilliantly. So thank you very much, Mike Bartlett. My Child is on till the 2nd of June at the Royal Court. It is virtually sold out, apart from Saturdays, apparently. So thank you again.
Thanks. Good night.